manner of the proposed construction of a compressor station. May we please have appearances of counsel?
Good afternoon. I'm Christine Roy from Rutter & Roy. I'm here on behalf of Tennessee Gas Pipeline LLC.
My name is David Cott, KRCP, recorder in the LLC, and I'm the attorney for the Amicus Curiae of the New Jersey Business and Industry Association.
Good afternoon. My name is Daniel A. Greenhouse, Law Center for. Here with Water Watch, New Jersey Islands Coalition, and this year.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Jason Brandon Kane, Deputy Attorney General for Respondent, New Jersey Department of Environmental.
Good afternoon, Council. Welcome, Ms. Roth.
May it please the court, I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
That's fine.
We are here today because the appellate division effectively rewrote Exemption 11 under the Highlands Act. And in doing so, there's an unreasonable result. It's inconsistent with the legislature and with the department's longstanding interpretation of that exemption. As you know, Exemption 11 exempts the following activities performed by public utilities, which are the routine maintenance and operations, rehabilitation, preservation, reconstruction, repair, or upgrade. But there are two express limiting principles that are already built into the exemption. That is, the activity must be performed on the public utilities lines, rights of way, or systems. And also, the activity must be consistent with the goals and purposes of the Highlands Act. The legislature carefully balanced two public policies with this exemption. The first being they wanted to ensure that public utilities would have or provide reliable service to its customers. And it also was protecting the environmental resources in the Highlands region. The result of the decision now is that public utilities can no longer utilize Exemption 11 for non-routine activities, which makes no sense. In fact, that decision really is contrary to the public policy that's already built into the exemption. The appellate division's interpretation is unreasonable also because it really isn't consistent with what the world of public utilities do. Namely, the phrase routine maintenance and operations is a term of art in the public utility world. These are activities that are done, they're of commonplace, of repetitious character, really not for any reason, but just to ensure that their facilities are operating safely. And so there's uninterrupted service again. So, however, the other items in the list are only done as needed. They're typically not ever done routinely. So here's what the appellate division did wrong. I thought I would just get right to that. They ignored the plain language of the exemption. They failed to give any deference to DEP's longstanding interpretation of Exemption 11, even though it found their interpretation to be plausible and thus not plainly unreasonable, which is the standard, which the court never even addressed the plainly unreasonable standard. The appellate division also failed to consider that portion of the legislature's policy statement, which recognizes the importance of providing every conceivable opportunity for appropriate economic growth and development to advance the quality of life of the residents of the region and the entire state. The court only really focused on the Highlands resources and protection of those resources. The court also relied upon two canons of statutory construction that we don't really believe belong here or were applicable. The first being the series qualifier canon, which is typically applied where you have a modifier and a list of activities or list of nouns or something. And here, this exemption wasn't written that way. In order to get there, the court had to ignore the word and in between maintenance and operations and the or at the end of the list before upgrade. The court also utilized the associated words canon, which was obviously didn't make sense to us either because it found upgrade to be the outlier. And we don't believe upgrade was the outlier at all. Upgrade and the other activities in the list after routine maintenance and operations, they're all non-routine activities. They're all only as needed. So, and also, you know, in being in the public utility world, everything you see in that exemption is the universe of activities that a public utility would undertake to to ensure that they have reliable service. So it makes complete sense to, in the public public utilities, that everything you're seeing in the exemption, the panoply of activities, if you will, they all do belong together. It makes perfect sense. So inserting a frequency requirement really does nothing to make the items more similar. That was another thing the court did, which we really didn't understand or didn't think applied. And I think just to point out, Tennessee's project is really the perfect example of why DEP's longstanding interpretation is the correct one. FERC is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. They found the project to be in the public convenience and necessity because there was a request for service, basically, a request for increased capacity by Con Ed. So they upgrade us to their system. That checks the box on the first limiting principle. The second limiting principle was to protect Highlands resources. And effectively, this project had, when it went to construction, had zero impacts to Highlands resources. So I think this project really highlights why the word routine really doesn't further the public policies of the Highlands Act the way the appellate division seemed to think it did. So with that, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
So there's a question of mootness in this case.
Yes.
How often does Exemption 11 come up? How often would a question of the nature presented here present itself?
It comes up, at least for, I'll speak just as to Tennessee Gas. This is the third Exemption 11 that it received for various upgrade projects that they have done since 2009. So it has come up, and Tennessee is an interstate natural gas pipeline, not an intrastate facility. So it does come up. I think if you went on to the Highlands website, the Highlands Council website, you'll see almost every Exemption 11 request is from a public utility, obviously. So you can see it's pretty active, that it's needed sometimes to, or quite frequently to do what it needs to do, what utilities need to do in their own judgment to provide reliable service, which is their legal mandate to do.
So in the examples you're familiar with, the case, they don't wait to have it resolved in court. They address the problem, and you're hoping for a ruling now as a result of that.
Yes.
Possibility of repetition.
Yes, this is capable of repetition. There's a practical effect of the court interpreting the exemption now de novo.
Why would it be evading review? Usually something that's capable of repetition yet evading review is because by nature, the thing that's being challenged is very short-lived. Here, the DEP didn't have to go ahead and determine that it was a routine upgrade, right?
Correct. Well, they have historically found or interpreted Exemption 11 to mean routine only modifying maintenance and operations activities.
And there is a published opinion that's precedential.
Yes. That court, the appellate division there acknowledged the public policy behind having reliable public utility service. This appellate division panel did not. And I think that was a big difference between the two decisions. Although that court found that they didn't reach the decision about whether it required, an upgrade had to be a routine upgrade. But that was the JCP&L case, and that involved a, it had an above ground facility such as what we have here. It wasn't a compressor station, but it certainly was almost identical facts.
The appellate division decision in this case is published, so that's precedential. So the appellate division's the appellate division's interpretation is what is currently precedential.
Yes.
And there's still an appeal pending with regard to the PAD that was issued by the DEP in January?
Yes. Yeah, so what happened was the decision came out, and so from there, Tennessee Gas, out of an abundance of caution, did submit additional supplemental information to the department to say, okay, we don't agree with the appellate division's decision, but we want to have legal authority to do what we're doing. We don't want to be out of compliance. So, and there were some threats by the environmental groups to sue and stop the project construction. So they submitted information to state that if you look at this from a very broad sense, our upgrade projects such as this, are they routine? So they did do that, but really, I don't want to say under protest, but just to say that out of necessity and, to manage the risk of litigation to stop the project, that they don't have any, they're doing this illegally. They did submit the information.
Basically a
backstop.
Backstop argument.
Correct. That's right.
Moving on to the merits. Can you elaborate for us on the meaning of upgrade, whether or not it's modified by routine? What does it encompass?
Upgrade would be an enhancement, an improvement. It could be in addition. I can give you a couple of real life examples. This was a compressor station. So Tennessee Gas ended up, after doing some modeling, hydraulic modeling, decided this was the most. It was like a limited project that could fulfill the request for additional capacity. There's only three ways in the interstate pipeline world to do that. One would be to do a pipeline loop, which would mean they would be building a loop immediately adjacent to the existing pipeline. And these facilities, by the way, I think it's important to note, Tennessee's facilities have been there since the 1950s. And I would also just, we do represent JCP and all other utilities. And I would say that a lot of the utilities in the state are very old. You know, they're from 1913, 1950s, we have 1930s. So that's important to note, because I think the legislature understood that, you know, the Highlands Act was passed after this, and that they would have to also look at the facilities that are there in place in the Highlands Preservation Area. But getting back to your question, Tennessee could have upgraded or met the request by the customer by one of three things. One was this upgrade that they ended up doing, pipeline looping, which has far greater environmental impacts, or they could have done a combination of upgrade or looping. So here they did the upgrade, and really because it had the least amount of environmental impacts. I mean, that's what they were looking at, you know, to comply with the law here and the public policy of the DEP.
And this was a former quarry.
This was a disturbed site. Yes, it was a former quarry. It was an industrial site that's been used by various projects over the years. So they purposely picked this site. They couldn't avoid the preservation area, but once they knew they couldn't do that, they knew that from hydraulic testing and modeling that they, in order to boost their system with compression, they had to be in a certain, you know, distance from the next compressor station. So this is why it had to be in the preservation area. But from there, that's where they looked at various sites. It's all in their alternatives analysis that's with FERC. And we did provide as part of our application for our Highlands applicability determination. And I think that's the other thing that the appellate division failed to recognize, which public utilities are highly regulated. You know, they're only going to do what is necessary to provide service, or if there's a service request or additional capacity needed, they're going to find the least impactful way to do that. And that's what FERC requires. That's even BPU, I think, you know, they're going to be looking to do what they're only allowed to do by law. So that, I think that's the point that the appellate division missed.
Please go ahead if there's anything in addition you'd like to present.
I think that's it. I'll be back on rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kahn.
There's one thing everyone in this courtroom can agree on, and that is on April 5th of this year, New Jersey was extraordinarily lucky when the earthquake that hit Northwest New Jersey did almost no damage. But suppose that earthquake had done severe damage and taken out the entire length of the Tennessee pipeline, and Tennessee had to reconstruct the pipeline. There would be nothing routine about that reconstruction. Here, we're dealing with an upgrade. Upgrades, by their nature, are not routine. They're only done when there is a need. And I think under your many decisions on statutory interpretation, that's outcome determinative, because you've said a number of times when the words of the statute are clear, we don't go any further. But I recognize the appellate division here did not find the statute clear and focused on the overall intent of the Highlands Act, which was to preserve the environment. And we agree, that is the primary intent of the Highlands Act. But the legislature met that goal, preservation of the Highlands, in two ways. in exemption 11. Number one, they said any exemption has to be consistent with the goals and policies of the Highlands Act. The second way, as to upgrades, it's not any upgrade. It's an upgrade of a public utility's lines, rights of ways, or systems. And that's how the legislature within Exemption 11 met its goal of protecting the Highlands. Let me get a little broader, because I think the legislature was also trying to do a balance here. One of the things the legislature has imposed on Tennessee and on other public utilities by statute is that they provide reliable service. Reliable service is crucial to the nursing home. It's crucial to the police department. It's crucial to consumers. It's crucial to my clients, the business community. The other thing that the legislature put right in the Highlands Act was that there should be economic development in and growth in the Highlands. So in doing the balancing of we need reliable service, which we do, we want economic growth, but on the other hand, we want to protect the environment, the legislature met that by the way they worded Exemption 11. Chief Justice Ravner, the court knows I'm a prepared lawyer. I just wanted to add one other thing, if I may, right out the box on mootness. And I'm familiar with your jurisprudence. There's another thing kicking around here on mootness, and that is this. This is a very important issue. And somebody's going to ask me, well, by definition, we granted certification. We only grant certification if it's an important issue. But what's different here is if we have, and I hope we don't, Hurricane Sandy, September 11, an earthquake, these utilities need to get up and running quickly. And the regulatory process takes longer. But what's different here from your other mootness cases is we have a respondent. And I want to be clear, they're acting in an absolute good faith. Absolute good faith, but a respondent who has resources, great lawyers, and is very aggressive about litigating these issues. The record in this case shows that. So unlike other mootness cases that you have, here we need a decision of this court, because if we have one of those calamities, it's not only the delay caused by the regulatory process, but it is a safe bet, and we all live in the real world, that the environmental groups will get into litigation that will delay getting the systems up again.
Couldn't this case also not be moot because the appellate division could still decide that it was not a routine upgrade?
And that's what distinguishes this case from the automobile accident where the release is given and the money is paid. There's still litigation going on here, Justice Wainwright, and that's what distinguishes this case from many of your mootness decisions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I, on behalf of New Jersey Business and Industry Association, may I thank the entire court again for granting us leave to appear as an amicus and granting us oral argument.
Thank you, Mr. Kahn. Mr. Greenhouse.
May it please the court. Thank you. First, I'd like to address the argument that maybe there will be an earthquake, maybe there will be a repeat of.
Would you mind keeping your voice a bit up?
Yes, Your Honor. Sorry, I apologize about that. I'd like to address first the argument that there might be an earthquake or a calamity. The argument presented by NJBIA is it shows a great misunderstanding of the Highlands Act and the DEP's regulatory framework. The DEP is required by the law to have a permitting review for Major Highlands development in the preservation area. You would look at NJSA 13:20-30, 33, and 34 for these specific mandates by the legislature. This is the starting point for what the DEP is supposed to do under the Highlands Act. The legislature provided the DEP with authority to have waivers for such permit applications if necessary. And the DEP has availed itself through duly promulgated regulations to have temporary emergency permitting situations for situations like an earthquake or a calamity or a superstorm or anything that would threaten the public health and safety. In fact, the DEP also has availed itself with meaningful public participation, I might add, of the opportunity for any public utility to seek a waiver for a public health and safety emergency in the situation where somebody might be required under the act to seek a permit, but doesn't have the time to do so. So to say that the exemption that we're talking about today was designed to provide that or to ensure the public health and safety shows a great misunderstanding about the legislation and the DEP's authority and the meaningful public participation, I might add, that created the duly promulgated regulations. excuse me. So if there was a calamity, it wouldn't be this exemption that would save us. It would be the temporary emergency permitting regulations and the waivers associated with public health emergencies.
But somebody who would know. Curiosity, Mr. Greenhouse, would the temporary emergency permitting regulations, certainly the answer to this, authorize a permanent upgrade to a facility such as we're talking about this compressor station? See what I'm saying?
Yes, Your Honor.
I could see a temporary type of permitting that might say, over the next 3 weeks, you may do X while power is out.
Right. And all of those procedures are set forth in detail at NJAC 7:38-7.1 and NJAC 7:38-6.5. And I started off there because I felt the need to immediately address that argument. But I was going to start off by saying that elephants do not hide in mouse holes. And we know this from Justice Scalia's decision in 2001 that the Supreme Court has held that generally Congress, or in this case, the New Jersey legislature, wouldn't change an environmental scheme or a public health and safety statute in a vague or ancillary term. And that's exactly what the petitioners are arguing for here, that an exemption, which under this court's jurisprudence must be strictly construed, would hide such an option to have an elephant like a project like this. And let's be clear here. This project is a massive expansion of the public utility service. This is not an upgrade in the sense that JCP&L's substation was held to be a routine upgrade in the 2013 case. In the 2013 appellate division decision, JCP&L proposed a substation upgrade. I think that was in the range of $5 million. That was based on BPU's finding that it was necessary for the reliability of existing customers. In this case, FERC's approval of the $108 million project, which is only a portion of the $250 or $260 million total East 300 project at issue here, FERC found that this project was for new service, 115,000 decatherms.
But the word upgrade is just defined as to raise or improve the grade of, to raise the quality of, to extend the usefulness of, or to replace something with a more useful version or alternative. The word upgrade itself does not say anything about it needing to be small or it needing to be only to existing customers, et cetera. So those are extra statutory requirements that you are seeking to impose on the statute. That's not actually in the statutory text, correct?
This would be a narrow construction of the term that's found in the statute. And if you do read the 2013 Appellate Division decision, it does appear, from my reading of that case, to, again, narrowly read the provision, and it didn't reach the question of whether upgrade should stand alone or with routine. It said even if it's a routine upgrade, it would satisfy that.
Correct. It was standard. Assuming it was a routine upgrade, and then that's where the comment about the existing customers came in, right?
Correct, Your Honor. And the rest of that sentence is, because BPU found that it was needed for the reliability of existing customers.
Mr. Greenhouse, if routine does modify all the words in that exemption, what constitutes a routine reconstruction?
Your Honor, this would be something that would be anticipated from the start. So if you're, so let's just say you have
What does reconstruction mean? What is the definition of reconstruction?
I think that when, Your Honor, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to speak over you. If I understand your question correctly, if you're installing a pipeline to transport natural gas, you know that there's a limited lifespan of that pipeline. You know it will have to be reconstructed at some point in the future. That would be anticipated. That would be
But the word routine doesn't mean anticipated. I thought it was defined as of a commonplace or repetitious character relating to or being in accordance with established procedure. So you're saying if you know that you're going to have to rebuild the pipeline once in 55 years, that means that it's routine?
Your Honor, a narrow construction of the statute, according to this court's jurisprudence in Alfieri, would implicate such
a reading. But that construction doesn't seem to fit with the definition of routine, of the term routine, as Justice Wainwright just noted. That construction, that the anticipation of having to reconstruct something once every 50, 60, 70 years does not comport with the definition of routine.
Your Honor, I think that it does when you have a narrow and strict construction of this exemption, which according to this court's jurisprudence in Alfieri should be strictly and narrowly construed so as not to go against the spirit or intent of the rest of the statute. So this is an exemption from a public health and safety or environmental statute that is designed to protect the public health and welfare. And
same question with a different term. Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example of a routine rehabilitation as distinguished from a non-routine rehabilitation?
Your Honor, and I'm going to answer your question as best as I can. Your Honor, when you're looking at the 17 exemptions in this part of the law, they all limit the exemptions to what existed at the time the statute was enacted. Each 17 exemptions. For example, if you had a municipal land use law approval at the time that the law For example, if you had a municipal land use law approval at the time the statute was enacted, that preserved or provided you with somewhat of an exemption, and those are the first three exemptions, or exemption number three, for example. The DEP, in fact, in a 2008 final agency decision, apply this court's jurisprudence from Alfieri to an exemption that it denied exactly for that purpose, because somebody had a municipal land use law approval but didn't perfect it with a treatment works approval or in time, and therefore the DEP rejected a HAD exemption under in 2008 and applied this court's jurisprudence from Alfieri to strictly construe the exemption at issue, and that would be Owens Properties.
Can you focus on the word rehabilitation? What's an example of routine,
right,
and of a non-routine rehabilitation?
Your Honor, so if you're taking all of these exemptions together and you understand that they were there to exempt activities associated with things that existed upon the enactment of the statute, but not to allow major expansions or significant expansions beyond that, then a routine rehabilitation would be with regard to what existed when the statute was enacted and would not allow a significant expansion like we have here with this project.
So I want to press the point, because we're trying to understand whether the word routine, as you've argued, modifies each part. And the overarching answer that you provided is not as helpful as you're directly responding to your own argument. You want routine to modify each one of these things. Tell us what a routine rehabilitation is and what a non-routine rehabilitation is. Give us an example, please.
Okay, Your Honor, I will try my best to give you an example, but I would also say that it's not on the burden of the challengers to define what a routine rehabilitation is.
We're trying to figure out what this means and whether your argument is a persuasive one. That's the reason that I'm asking. We're not placing a burden on you.
So again, maybe this should be the subject of a rule promulgation with meaningful public participation by public utilities, sister agencies, and the DEP. But in my estimation, my estimation of what a routine rehabilitation might be would be if something that existed at the time of the enactment of this statute in 2004 was in need of rehabilitation. Maybe that means a better meter or transformer along an electrical line, or a different maybe some kind of rust prevention, something to improve it, something like that, but not the major expansion that we're seeing here.
If the thing was built in 2005, then that same rehabilitation would not be allowed.
I think that the exemption would not be able to apply if it was an expansion.
I understand your question. It had to exist at the time the statute was passed. So you gave an example of a building that it had existed in 2004, and then you needed to make some small change to it, and that's okay. But I'm saying, what if the building is built afterwards? No problem with that. But then you need to make a small change to it. That's not okay anymore because it was built after the statute was enacted?
Was it built with a permit?
Yes, it was built with a permit. But now they want the exemption because they're saying that it's a rehabilitation.
Yes, then I think the exemption would apply. It would be a lawfully existing structure under the Act, and therefore any.
So any this is also a lawfully existing structure, right? The pipelines?
No, this court, I don't believe there was any compressor station at all in this location. It was not there at all. This is an entirely new.
Correct. They want to build it to improve service, which is the definition of upgrade.
I'm not sure upgrade is a defined word in the statute or DEP's regulations.
Agreed that it's not defined in the statute, but it is defined in dictionaries as to raise or improve the grade of, to raise the quality of, to replace something with a more useful version or alternative.
I guess if it needed to be defined, that should probably be done by DEP according to the APA, according to the Metro Media standards. It seems like it would be a definition that would be widely applicable to
statutes and regulations have undefined terms all the time. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the statutes tell us that if it's not defined in the statute, then you look for common usage, or I forget exactly the phrasing, but right at the beginning of the statutes. And regulations have terms that are sometimes defined and sometimes not. So there's, if you're saying there's a Metro Media requirement that there be rulemaking every time there's an undefined term in a regulation or a statute, that's a lot of definitions that would be going on.
Your Honor, maybe I wasn't clear. I didn't say that there needed to be in every situation. I just meant as a response to the questions about the definitions of these terms and how they might be applicable to this case. It seems that maybe it would be appropriate that if there is an interest, we have the amicus curiae here that represents a wide industry group, and we have a large public utility, an entity that claims to be a public utility here, and we have very many members of the groups that I represent interested too. It seems like maybe then in this particular circumstance with these particular words that seem to be of such great consequence to so many people that the department, it would behoove the department to define them according to the APA.
But that's very different from this court ordering the department to undergo, to conduct rulemaking.
We're not asking for that.
Asking
really.
For us to do just
no. We're just saying that if petitioner wants to prove that the appellate division incorrectly construed the statute, then I think that would be an appropriate rebuttal to that argument.
If the legislature had meant for the word routine to modify all of the terms in the list, why did it add the word and between maintenance and operations rather than simply excluding the routine maintenance, comma, operations, comma, rehabilitation, comma, preservation, comma, reconstruction, comma, repair, comma, or upgrade?
It doesn't, Your Honor, it doesn't seem to me that saying routine maintenance and operations as one part of that list changes the meaning of the adjective routine as it applies to the rest. And if you're going to look at that argument about maintenance and operations being connected by end, you might also look at the or before upgrade. But we know from other cases in which the DEP has argued that or used in a statute can be conjunctive. It can be defined to as an end or A-N-D. So the or upgrade could be read here and should be read here if you're strictly constructing this exemption as A-N-D upgrade. So if you look at this list of words and you read the or upgrade as A-N-D upgrade, as in the Safe Dam Act, where both an owner or operator are responsible or liable for a dam. The legislature chose to use the word or when they put owner or operator there, but they also meant it as a conjunctive, owner and operator. Both of those parties are liable under the Safe Dam Act. Here, it's this, it should be read in the same way. Routine maintenance and operations, comma, rehabilitation, comma, and upgrade, not or, and then a new set of circumstances, especially because there is no semicolon there. That would be how you would write the sentence to distinguish routine from the rest of the words.
Suppose we're an abbreviated sentence, since we're focused on the grammar of it now, and it only called for routine maintenance and operations, comma, and upgrade. Would routine apply to all three?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Can you repeat that, please?
I'm trying to simplify the sentence to test the principle you just gave. Justice Winter asked you about the meaning of the word and between maintenance and operations. So, and you've told us that or before upgrade can mean and. Let's take those two. If this exemption only read the routine maintenance and operations, comma, and upgrade, dot, 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 would routine apply and modify all three?
Yes, I believe so, Your Honor. That would be...
an unusual grammatical structure. Would you agree?
Your Honor, if I was writing the legislation and I intended routine not to apply to upgrade, then I would not write it that way. I would write it a different way with a semicolon. And Your Honor, I returned. I'm here to defend the appellate division's decision. And I believe that the appellate division got it exactly right here with regard to this grammatical construction. The ancient maxim, nociter associus, really makes sense. If it's vague, then how can you read out the word routine? That's what they intended. Why would the legislature here exempt routine maintenance and operations, but non-routine upgrades? Imagine the distinction. Imagine what could be right, and the thought experiment by the appellate division here is exactly right. Could an upgrade be, could a coal-fired power plant upgrade to a nuclear facility be considered an upgrade that should be exempt from the
isn't it a common understanding of these words that maintenance and operations are things that are generally routine, that happen on a habitual basis, as opposed to every other word that follows a comma, that are generally triggered by some other event. Maintenance and operation are not triggered by some other event other than the habitual use of the owner, whoever is managing it. So isn't that the distinction?
Yes, Your Honor. And in fact, the point that you're making reinforces the argument that routine was chosen by the legislature intentionally to apply to all of those things. It could maintenance and operation could be routine or frequently are routine, but why would they then use the word routine maintenance and operations if they weren't meaning routine to apply to everything there?
Because help me with something then. The chief asked you earlier about routine rehabilitation and non-routine rehabilitation. You told us of an example where the structure was permitted and eventually needed to be de-rusted, right? What's a non-routine rehabilitation example then? What's one that wouldn't qualify?
In my experience, again, you know, in my experience, I have seen the department apply these exemptions narrowly, not broadly. They have relied on this court's guidance from Alfieri to narrowly and strictly construe these exemptions.
I thought they had always interpreted the word routine to not apply to all the other words.
We have not seen that anywhere. It's not in the record here, besides the fact that they claim it in argument, but there isn't any regulatory publication or decision or final agency decision which can be used as support for that. So it may be the case, Your Honor. I can't speak to that, whether they have or they have not, but there's no decision on which to base that, or no regulation or response to comments in a regulatory promulgation or a publication of any sort.
I thought it was in the JCP&L case, the 433 NJ Super at 226, that the DEP argued that routine only modifies the words maintenance and operations and no other words in the list.
The department did argue in that case, yes, but of course it was not decided in that
Understood.
Case.
I was just saying, hasn't the department taken the position? Mm-hmm. You said the department always narrowly construes the terms, which I thought you meant means because previously you've said narrowly construed should mean that the word routine has to apply to all the words. Mm-hmm. So I thought you were answering that the department has always applied the word routine to all the words, but I had thought they hadn't. They had argued that the word routine shouldn't apply to all the words. So that's what I was trying to get at.
You're right, Your Honor. I did not mean to say that they got this one right. I think they, as the appellate division held, they did not read this one strictly as they should have.
Can I try this one more time? Can we compare routine maintenance with routine repair? If you use the word routine to both of those, the meaning is almost completely lost, because a repair by its definition will only happen when something is damaged, as opposed to maintenance, which is on an ongoing basis to make sure that something is continuously operating the way it's meant to operate. So how do you justify those two terms when you add the word routine, it changes what a repair is. You don't expect things to be damaged routinely. It is when it happens, and that's when things need to be repaired. Is that fair?
Actually, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. I think that when you're thinking about your car, for example, you know, there are routine maintenance functions, but there are also routine repairs. There are other things you could do to your car that would be an expansion, a great expansion of your car, like if you dropped a nuclear engine into the hood instead of what was already there.
So what's a routine upgrade in your example of a car?
A routine upgrade would be snow tires for the winter or something else you might anticipate. Like,
that's not routine if you live in California.
or better headlights, or, you know, something that you might, a better cup holder, you know, that you might anticipate from the beginning of the existence of that structure.
Can we come back to the example you alluded to earlier about a nuclear plant? And obviously you would argue that that's not exempt, that would have to go through the permitting process. Does the word routine do the work in that example, or does upgrade alone? Is going from a compressor station to a nuclear power plant an upgrade?
Your Honor, I do think that the word routine is doing the majority of the work there. And that's why the legislature wrote the exemption in this way. I think without the word routine, you have a very thin ice to stand on. If the department, for example, approved a nuclear facility as exempt because it was an upgrade, then it would be making a major policy decision that it wasn't authorized to under the Highlands Act. And again, I would point you to the rest of the Highlands Act, which directed and mandated that the DEP have a permit review program for major Highlands development in the preservation areas. And that's the starting point. So
if I understand your answer, it's that to go from a compressor station to a nuclear power plant is an upgrade. It's just not a routine upgrade.
Correct, Your Honor.
Maybe Ms. Roy will comment on that in rebuttal.
Correct. And so you're stepping into these major policy questions for the DEP to exempt major Highlands developments in the preservation area from the permit review program that are not routine upgrades or anticipated when the act was enacted.
What if the DEP, though, in order to approve of the going from the compressor station to the nuclear power plant, wouldn't they have to fulfill the rest of Exemption 11, which requires them to find that the activity is consistent with the goals and purposes of the act? So they would have to find that building a nuclear power plant in the Highlands is consistent with the goal and purpose of the act of preserving the Highlands in, you know, whichever best way possible. But then also, wouldn't they also have to find that it's part to the public utility right of way or system that already existed of the public utility?
Yes, Your Honor. So the consistency determination is, again, it's thin, and it doesn't have the same level of scrutiny or information that's required under a formal permit review process. The permit that's required for major Highlands development in the preservation area is called a Highlands Preservation Area Approval, or short, HPAA. And that process is much more rigorous than what the consistency determination that we're seeing here. So the legislature did not grant DEP this great authority to exempt projects that it deemed consistent for major Highlands development in the preservation area. It required DEP to conduct a formal permit review for HPAAs, and the consistency determination doesn't rise to that level. So the legislative intent is clear, again, in 30, 33, and 34 of this act. The permit review is the starting point. This is the exemption. This is not the authorization for major Highlands development in the preservation area.
Other questions, anyone?
Thank you, Councilor.
Kane.
The court has heard extensive arguments this afternoon as to the statutory interpretation of Exemption 11. I'll add 3 points to the colloquy as to the legal question concerning plain language, legislative intent, and deference. First, as a matter of logical structure of the exemption's text, the word routine only applies to maintenance and operation activities. This matches the grammatical structure of the statute, as maintenance and operations is a sublist within a longer list of activities, signified by the word and between the words. This is not only a reasonable interpretation of the statute, but the only way the statute made sense. And if the statute listed the activities, as Justice Wayne or Appner pointed out, maintenance, comma, operations, comma, rehabilitation, comma, and so on, the appellate division's interpretation to apply routine to all the words would be more correct. Second, to the Act's express legislative intent of environmental resource protection, that follows the plain language interpretation. Legislative intent does not support applying the word routine to upgrade for 4 reasons. 1, the legislature intended to emphasize the express purpose of the Act through the second part of the exemption, that the activity is consistent with the goals and purposes of the Highlands Act. The EP does this in consultation with the Highlands Council to assess impacts to various Highlands resources, including open waters, aquifers, forest areas, steep slopes, and wildlife habitat. This is where DEP's administrative resources are best focused. 2, the appellate division wrongly reasoned that there should be an implied limiting principle for each activity that must further environmental protection, but limiting an upgrade or other listed activity to be routine does not necessarily further environmental protection. There is no support that a routine activity is always more or less protective of environmental resources than a non-routine act, and thus that justification is arbitrary. 3.
You could argue that perhaps the converse is true, correct? If something's happening routinely, it's happening more often and might have a greater environmental impact.
Correct.
Sorry, I interrupted your recitation.
3, the appellate division did not consider that the legislature created an exemption for public utilities to allow them flexibility to keep their system at industry and regulatory standards. When routine maintenance and operations is not sufficient to sustain the system, the legislature explicitly listed restorative activities as non-routine maintenance and operations to account for intervening situations. We would not expect restorative activities like a reconstruction to be routine for a public utility, and thus the word routine cannot apply for the whole list. 4, we would not expect the legislature to assign such a task to assess routineness of a public utility to its environmental agency, while other agencies already perform that function. Those 4 points as to legislative intent do not support the appellate division's interpretation.
Your point on the last one, I'm sorry, is that BPU would be more appropriate to determine whether something is routine for a public utility than DEP, correct?
Correct, in the state context. And lastly, this is the classic case for the court to provide deference to the agency. If the court believes that the statutory interpretation question is close, the appellate division already found that DEP's plain language interpretation is plausible and should have deferred to DEP, as the legislature charged DEP with administration of the act, including providing it with permitting authority to regulate development in the Highlands region. This is the type of issue that the court has deferred to agencies before in the past. And although we feel that DEP's interpretation is the correct interpretation, it also falls within substantial deference to agencies, and the court should defer to DEP's interpretation.
Questions, anyone? Counsel, is there anything you'd like to add in addition?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Roy, rebuttal?
I just wanted to address a few points that Mr. Greenhouse made. First of all, we agree that the exemption should be narrowly construed, but it must be reasonable. And that's where we think that, you know, the appellate division got it wrong. It's not reasonable to narrowly construe it so much that only routine activities are covered by the exemption. Because certainly, as you point out, and what we pointed out in our papers, is there's really no such thing as a routine preservation or routine reconstruction. These activities are only done as needed to provide reliable service. So, you know, and I think Mr. Greenhouse's failure to provide an example that really is kind of a real example in the utility world kind of proves that point. Also, I think there's another false thinking in the appellate division's decision, and that is that routine activities are not necessarily, you know, they have a smaller footprint. They have less environmental impacts. And I think, Justice Patterson, you were going to this. That is absolutely not true. I can give you an example with Tennessee Gas where they had to do routine maintenance and operation activity, which was to replace a segment of pipeline that required thicker wall pipe because of population density. People were moving and there was development around the pipeline that under federal regulation requires a thicker walled pipe. Again, it's all about pipeline safety in this instance. But this example was they weren't increasing capacity, they weren't upgrading, but what they were doing was replacing that segment of pipe with thicker walled pipe for safety. But they took down a lot of trees because it was necessary to do this work. So that out of routine maintenance came greater environmental impacts, you know, as a result of than this project, which was an upgrade to provide service. So I just wanted to kind of give you that example because I think that's there's some faulty thinking that in every case that, you know, routine maintenance and operations is a smaller footprint somehow with inherently lesser environmental impacts. It's not necessarily true. So I wanted to mention that. Also, the other thing that Mr. Greenhouse said that's important about this, I think, thought that there's a limitation on the lifespan of a pipeline is not true either. And that's important because all the routine operation and maintenance activities, all the non-routine activities, that's why the lifespan of a pipeline is indefinite, because they're constantly doing everything that's required by their regulators to keep a safe, you know, pipeline to provide service. And so that's the other piece of it. There's all these other, you know, what if a regulator requires non-routine work because they found that there's new technology or something that could help with safety, let's say, and reliability? Are we going to say it wouldn't be allowed under the exemption because it's not routine? It just doesn't make sense. It's an unreasonable interpretation, given all that what public utilities have to do to keep safe, reliable, efficient utility service. I think that's really important. So I don't think the bottom line is, I think that Mr. Greenhouse's example that narrowly construing somehow, you know, the nuclear example, I think where you were going to—
Are you talking about the nuclear plant or yes, the nuclear engine that Justice Noriega is going to have shortly?
The nuclear plant.
I just want to note, I'm not going to park next to him anymore.
The nuclear plant it would not be an upgrade in that scenario. It's not routine or not routine. It has to be an upgrade to the existing system. What is the system? It's a pipeline system. It's not a nuclear system. That would be another, that's not something that Tennessee or another utility could do. So I think there's
massive regulatory process for a nuclear.
Yes, yes. And it's not
to be in the Highlands or anywhere.
Exactly. Yes, Your Honor. I think that's the point, that's kind of an absurd example. And somehow that was where the court went to get this other limiting. They felt they needed some limit, another guardrail, if you will, to protect the Highlands resources. But those guardrails, those limiting factors are already in there. I really did nothing further in terms of furthering the public policy here. So, and then finally, I just wanted to mention that utilities, you know, in the Highlands Preservation Area, they do serve areas within the Highlands region and outside the region. So this is why it's so important. They're not just servicing the Highlands Preservation Area, as in this case, this is servicing Con Ed, a New York provider. But certainly some of the systems that are in the Highlands that cross through the Highlands, which are all linear, most of them, you know, think about transmission lines, pipelines, and the like, they are servicing other areas in New Jersey. And I think the legislature understood that by granting, you know, by promulgating or, you know, approving this exemption 11. And it should be interpreted narrowly, but broadly in this sense. System is pretty broad. It's not limited to just rights of way or lines. They're saying if you need system upgrades, you need system repairs, routine or otherwise, you'll be able to get this exemption so long as it's connected to your line systems or your rights of way. And the consistency with the Highlands, the purposes of the Highlands Act is really the final guardrail. So I think that, again, with respect to the appellate division, I think they got it wrong. I think DEP's longstanding interpretation on that point, it is a longstanding interpretation. Tennessee, this is their third exemption where the department hasn't interpreted the same way it did here. And they have interpreted routine only to apply to routine maintenance and operations in the JCP&L case. Those are just four examples off the top of my head that I can give you to say, yes, it's longstanding and it makes the most sense. And it's the right interpretation. And I, on behalf of Tennessee Gas, I just wanted to thank the court for granting certification and hearing this very important matter. Thank you.
Thank you to all counsel for the very fine argument.